720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth. Kind of where you left me on Saturday nights. Back for a minute, filling in tonight. In lieu of sports, you get a little bit of Guth tonight. Well, so what else am I going to do than talk about year-end review stuff and look ahead to 2020? Holy moly, I can't believe it's almost 2020. There are days left of this decade. I can't believe that. That's a thing. I spent most of this decade here on the station in this chair, I think, either in this building or over at Tribune Tower when we were there sitting on Michigan Avenue over there in the little glass fishbowl studio. But it is so strange. I can't believe that we are entering a new decade. We're going to be talking about that. And of course, I want to hear from you. I would love to take your calls tonight. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to call and say something about the decade, maybe a New Year's resolution, maybe you want to think about a very memorable moment of this past decade. I would love to hear those, especially, you know, something personal. Maybe you did something really huge or something really maybe just meaningful, or I don't know. I want to hear about that. But we're going to be talking to some folks to help us look ahead and also look back. We're going to be talking with Pat McDonald, who's a film critic at HollywoodChicago.com. You have heard him on this station many, many times. He's going to be talking about digital choices for us on Amazon and Netflix. And of course, the best stuff in the theaters right now that we should be looking at. And, you know, while we got him, I'm going to talk to him a little bit about some of the films he liked most this past year and what he's looking forward to in the year ahead. It's a little soon to start asking him about Oscar picks, but, you know, I'm going to probably try anyway. So I'll talk with him. I'm also talking with Van Mobley, PhD, who is an economist. We're going to kind of take a look. What is the economic outlook for 2020? I think that's a big question on a lot of people's minds. And those of you who are regular listeners of Crane's Daily Gist, where I host every weekday, I talk about that a lot, especially how that's going to impact the housing market, how that's going to impact everything here and business and real estate and all those things. So we'll talk with him about that. Then we're going to talk with Claire Duggan, who's the co-owner of the Duggan Sisters, which is a natural products line. We're going to talk about getting healthy, using the right stuff, starting the year off really great. Of course, the products matter, right? Because we've got a bunch of chemicals and junk in our system, not going to work out. So, and then I have a very special treat for you. Lloyd Bachrach is going to be joining us by phone, and he is a motivational speaker about overcoming challenges, and he is going to talk with us about making our workplaces and our community spaces more accessible and more inclusive. So I'm really excited for all these folks. Here's the thing. When I book a radio show, I'm like, what do I want to know? And who are the smartest people I can find to talk about it? Because I like to learn about stuff too. So that's what we're going to do. So we got a bunch of guests. We got a bunch of things. We're going to look ahead and we're going to look back, help close out this decade. Esteemed producer Yasmeen Shika is in the studio. She's in the booth tonight. She's busy doing stuff, but she's here. So if you want to talk with me, you got to be nice to her, as Brian Noonan always says. Again, 312-981-7200 if you want to give us a call. I would love to hear about your New Year's resolutions. Let's just start right there for the next few minutes and talk about resolutions. Here's what I think I'm going to do this year. I don't know. I think what I'm going to do, instead of going like, I tend to go kind of boil the ocean, right? Like I tend to go like, I'm going to do this one big thing. Instead of one big resolution, I think I'm going to pick 12 little resolutions, not necessarily a resolution, more like a habit, a tiny thing that'll make me just be a little better. And each month I'll focus on a different one. For example, I do pretty well with sleep, but we can all do better. And we're looking at so many screens in our lives and stuff like that. So 1 month, I've decided I'm going to focus on getting really, really excellent sleep, like not looking at the screens, things like that, before I go to bed, etc., not watching TV late, all that kind of stuff. So that's an example of what I think I'm going to do this year, but I want to hear from you. Again, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a break here in a little bit, and when we come back, we're going to be talking New Year's resolutions, maybe even decade resolutions. I don't know. That's a lot. Speaking of boiling the ocean. Anyway, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth here with you till 10 o'clock. I know this is a spot on the dial I've been on many times, so happy to be back here with you for the evening, filling in. So we're looking at, you know, we're in the year-end kind of mode, right? We're looking at what happened this decade, what happened this year, what's gonna happen in the year ahead. That's a lot of stuff to do. That's what we're doing this evening. Yasmeen, do you have any New Year's resolutions? Do you make resolutions? Are you a resolution person?
I am, but I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. I mean, I graduate this year, so I guess I just want to go full-time somewhere, so that's always good.
I resolved to get a job. Good. That's
yeah.
a good...
I mean, I love working here, so
yeah.
that'd be great.
Yeah, we like having you here. Well, that's a good one. I mean, I was saying just before, I know you were doing all the things in there, and you had chaos going on in the booth, but I was saying just before the break, one thing I think I'm going to do, instead of one big resolution, I think I'm going to focus on a really great habit each month. Like, really good sleep 1 month, and then make sure I read 30 minutes a day the next month, and then make sure I write 30 minutes a day the following month.
That's a really good resolution. I actually might pick up on that.
Take
well.
It. Free ideas right here at WGN Radio. That's the thing. I don't know. I think because I tend to be, you know how it is. You set a resolution of like, I'm going to do all the things and have all the muscles and eat all the apples or whatever the thing is, right? And then like it's March and you're like, yeah, I didn't even do that. So I don't want to, you know, you don't want to set yourself up for failure because then you feel, you know, they feel terrible. And you're like, well, I can't even eat an apple every day. I can't even do it.
Well, you got to hit everybody hits the gym for the first month of the
I
year
know.
And then the memberships all start dying out.
That's exactly right. So when I am not here, one of the things I do outside of radio is that I teach yoga and that is a real thing. So in January, those rooms are so crowded. There's so many people. I love it because to me, it's an opportunity to introduce new people to yoga because a lot of people are like trying it for the first time. You see a lot of like couples. One of them has been doing yoga a while. So it's finally like, come on, come with me. It's fun. You know, you see a lot of like a familiar face who has a partner with them trying yoga for the first time. And I feel like a lot of responsibility then because I feel like, okay, it is up to me to make this person love yoga. And if they have a bad experience today in my class, they are never trying it again. So I got to make sure that they're good and they feel good at the end of it, that they don't, you know, pull anything and make it use language that makes it feel like it's accessible to everybody. Because I think sometimes people go in feeling like, I tried it once. It's not for me. I couldn't do it. That's not the point. No one's good at yoga at the beginning. That's not the point. It's not about being good at it. It's about feeling good. So I feel like that. But then by, you know, March 1st, crickets. Nobody. Tumbleweeds rolling through that place. Nobody's in there. So that's a thing. 312-981-7200 if you would like to share some New Year's resolutions. You know, one thing I love, regular listeners know this, I love words. I love language. I love languages. And I took a look at the words of the year, the Merriam-Webster word of the year always comes out, right? I looked at that for the last 10 years. I looked at that since 2010. And in 2010, the word was austerity. Which that sort of makes sense. We were talking about a lot of geopolitical issues at the time. Then in 2011, the word of the year was pragmatic. That's surprising to me. I figure like that's not one of those words that's suddenly everywhere. That word's always been around. That one kind of surprises me. In 2012, the word of the year was socialism. In 2013, it was science. I sometimes feel like that should be the word of the day every day. 2014, the word was culture. I like that. 2015 was ism, which is sort of funny, you know, to describe an attitude or a belief, like, or, you know, like if it's something I said a lot, you'd be like, oh, that's an ameism, right? An ism. Surreal was the word of the year in 2016, which I can sort of see. Let's see, 2017, the word of the year was feminism. In 2018, the word of the year was justice. And in 2019, the word of the year was they, as a pronoun, not a plural, but as a singular pronoun, because AP style and some other style books decided you could use the word they for somebody who did not want to use he or she to describe their gender. So they became the word of the year in 2019. Any guesses on the word of the year in 2020? We don't know yet. Well, we got to wait and see. I hope it's an uplifting word. I feel like the last decade, I mean, if you look back, we've got surreal, ism, justice. Like we've had a lot of social stuff up, right? Up and moving and happening. We've had a lot of change this past decade. So I'm hoping for like a really uplifting word. I don't know what though. I don't know what it would would be. I hope it's a good one. Again, call us with your New Year's resolutions or maybe a happy moment you'd like to share from the last year or last decade. Heck, let's go for it. 312-981-7200. There's all kind of fun lists this time of year, right? Looking back, like the biggest tech stories and the biggest food stories and the biggest, right? So I tried to look at a lot of those, and some of our guests tonight are going to be talking about some of them. But I was looking at some of the biggest food stories of the past year. And it's really, it's interesting. I could have guessed several of them because I've talked about a lot of them on Crane's Daily Gist. One of them is the way that plant-based meat went. And even that, there's a lot of offshoots, right? We have Tyson was invested in the Beyond Meat and then bailed out right before the IPO, probably to their chagrin because it made a boatload of money. We saw that. We saw a lot of fast food chains, like the Impossible Whopper had been around for a while, but suddenly, right, you start to see other chains experimenting. Like, I think Subway has like a, I don't know what it is. I think it's like a meatball sub that's meatless now, something like that. So all these, I think everybody's kind of waiting on McDonald's, right? That's sort of the big one at the moment because there's a test that was happening in Canada for plant-based meat, but still McDonald's hasn't named like this is who it's going to be. It's going to be Beyond Meat or it's going to be Impossible, or they don't know. They haven't said. So I think a lot of eyes are to that. And then this was kind of funny. Another big food and beverage story of the last year was the hard seltzer wars. How last summer everybody ran out of White Claw and the internet lost its mind because that's a thing. I don't know. I've had it. It's okay. It's fine. It's a fine beverage. I don't mind it at all. So those were some kind of big ones. The other ones that in the food realm that I thought were interesting were, we saw some leadership stuff and we saw some kind of the business angle of things like locally Kraft Heinz saw a lot of changes and a lot of issues and a lot of struggle. We also saw, the CEO of McDonald's, Steve Easterbrook, kind of out of nowhere. He not very long ago exited. If you would have asked a year ago, you know, if you would have seen that coming, no way. I think a lot of people were blindsided by that. But after he admitted to having a consensual relationship with a subordinate and left. And so suddenly McDonald's had a new CEO and it was someone who had at some point maybe had a bit of a contentious relationship with some of the franchisees. We also saw a lot of workers at franchise locations of McDonald's taking legal action against working conditions, talking about customers were abusive to them and sometimes management wouldn't do anything. So I think there was a lot of food stories that veered into the business side of things, but also kind of veered into the social issue side, because we also here in Chicago were talking quite a bit about the minimum wage ordinance and how that was going to look, especially for tipped workers. And so a lot of restaurants got involved in that conversation. So it's been, I'm kind of still not believing we're at the end of the year because it still feels like we're just halfway there. But I think I say that every year. And I think that it only gets faster and faster. My grandfather, who many of you have heard me talk about him many times, who died a year ago, February, he lived a very long time, and we used to talk about that and all the time of how fast we go, oh man, time flies. I haven't called you in a couple weeks. You know, he'd go, just wait, just wait. You think it's fast now. And at the time, like I was in my 30s when I said that to him. And then, you know, after I turned 40, he's like, just wait. It gets faster. It gets faster. And he was like, your 70s will be a blink, and then your 80s, and then your 90s, and suddenly you're like facing 100 years old and you don't know what to do with yourself. It gets faster every decade. And I'm like, oh man. I don't know, still in my 40s, so it remains to be seen if it's going to speed up in my 50s. But yeah, I still can't believe we're at the end of the year already, but it's a thing. It's a thing. So most memorable moment, Yasmin, what would you say? The most memorable moment of 2019 for you?
I've got to say when I found out I was going to be the evening news intern at WGN-TV.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I found Brava. Out. Thank you. Yeah, and then I came here after, like right after I finished that. But I didn't expect it. I actually, it's a funny story. I don't even remember applying because I applied
You're
to
like,
so many.
You guys, I'm so good. I get jobs I didn't even apply for.
No, I applied to so many that when they reached out, I was like, wait, did I even apply? Is this a scam?
Is this not true? Is this
no,
a thing?
But it was honestly, that was, I hustled so much during that internship and I learned a lot. So I'd say like my work ethic during 2019 has become so much better. So.
If you had to pick one word for 2019, what would it be?
Epic.
Epic. Nice. That's a good one. I would say, What's right about, I feel like there was a lot of hustle in the good way, right? Like I was moving around a lot. Like, okay, gotta go here. Now I gotta go here. Gotta go here. Okay, this is here. This is here. I was like scurrying around town a lot because I had all these different projects cooking. I feel like it was the year of hustle.
It definitely was. I feel like everybody this year was just working so much harder than the previous years.
So much. And I said at the end of 2018, I think I even, we can go back and play the tape, I think, on this very station. I said at the end of 2018, I think I said, oh, man, 2018 was, man, we were all scrapping so hard. I think everybody was working four jobs. Like, everybody was doing the stuff. I can't wait for 2019. It's going to be so much calmer. Oh, foolish Amy Guth.
Well,
foolish.
What do you think of those people who say, oh, 2019 wasn't my year, but 2020 is my year? Because I feel like I say that every year.
I say it every year. I would go so far. I'm not sure that this past decade was my decade. I think it was an uphill decade. I had a lot of challenges, a lot of gifts and blessings as well. But I looking back on it, I was like, man, all I did was work for, like, I just worked. I didn't do anything. I didn't go on vacation. I had a couple of opportunities to travel through work, but I was like, man, I need to chill a little bit in the decade ahead. I feel like 2000 to 2009 was like a little bit, I think I was living a little more, and then I was more focused just on working. My grandfather, who I just mentioned, he used to give me so much grief about that because he would always say on my birthday, like, what did you do the most this year? And I'd be like, working. When can you come and see me? I'd be like, oh, I gotta work. So I should learn my lesson from this decade and live in on a bigger scale in the decade ahead. But again, you know what? You're right. I say it every year. I'm like, I'm gonna do better and do more and blah blah blah.
Don't let me discourage you or anything.
Oh, it won't discourage me. I'm gonna keep beating my head against this wall until I'm, you know, the end of my life. Every year I'm gonna be like, this is the year. We'll see about that.
I'm right there with you.
Thank you. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And we come back, we're talking with Pat McDonald, who is a film critic at HollywoodChicago.com. He's going to tell us what in the heck we should be watching both at home and in theaters right now. And, of course, we're going to ask him a little bit about the movies he loved this past year. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with me tonight. Appreciate you hanging out. Well, we're kind of doing a year-end sort of show, right? This is the kind of the time of the year where we're running around doing lots of stuff, reflecting on the past year and looking ahead to the year to come. In this case, reflecting on the past decade and looking ahead to the decade to come. That's still a thing I can't quite get my head around because, oof, time flies. Anyway, but in this little in-between phase, I think we should all kind of take a minute, take a break, watch some stuff, catch up on some movies, go to the theater, do some stuff. And who better to guide us through that process than Pat McDonald, who is a film critic at HollywoodChicago.com. Regular listeners of this station have heard him many, many times. Pat, hello.
Hello. How are you, Amy Guth?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for coming on tonight. I appreciate you joining us.
I appreciate you having me on.
All right. So what the heck should we be watching here in this? This is kind of the, like, the twilight hour, right? Where it's like, nah,
yeah,
the year's coming to a close. The new year hasn't started yet. So it's kind of quiet. We actually have a little bit of time this time of year to catch up on stuff, including movies that we might have missed.
Absolutely. And, you know, Christmas Day is always a big day for releases. So there were three major releases on Christmas Day, and also a couple films I wanted to recommend because, you know, a lot of people have time over the holidays to kind of go out to the theaters and see some of the stuff that might be coming up for the awards consideration going forward. And awards season, of course, starts in a couple weeks with the Golden Globes.
I can't believe that's happening already.
I know.
This year flew. I feel like you were just on with me talking about the Golden Globes. It was like 2 months ago. And here we are. Okay. So what's the stuff in theaters that we should be watching right now?
So right now, definitely Uncut Gems. Now, this is the Adam Sandler film that he's getting a lot of buzz for. He's actually getting buzz for Best Actor for this.
Wow.
And it stars him, Kevin Garnett, Lakeith Stanfield, and Julia Fox, who almost steals the picture. But Sandler's just a dynamo. He plays a guy named Howard Ratner. He's a gem dealer who is addicted to gambling. So when he purchases a rare stone from a blood diamond district in Africa, it seems cursed to influence his life going forward. So it's kind of about superstition as well. Mm. Kevin Garnett, the NBA star, is involved in the gem in a bizarre way. The film is set in 2012. He retired in 2016. And Howard encounters him because of it. So this is sort of an American Dream film gone bad. The way the American Dream envelops us, as a symbol for America, I was just so taken with this film and taken with Sandler's performance. This is a perfect score film for me, 5 out of 5.
Wow, you don't give out a lot of those, Pat.
I do not.
I am familiar with your work. That is not a thing you do. Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about this is a very different side, a different depth for Sandler that I don't think a lot of people have seen before.
Well, the two film brothers, Josh and Benny Safdie, their dad was a diamond dealer. So they know this business intimately. This is sort of a very personal film for them. And it's a roller coaster ride. It really is. So, highly, highly recommended if you're into a different kind of film journey.
I like it. Okay, yeah. What else should we be seeing right now?
Speaking of journeys, 1917. This is directed by Sam Mendes, who did American Beauty. This is two World War One British soldiers, Schofield, played by George MacKay, and Blake, played by Dean Charles Chapman. They have the impossible mission of delivering a message to the front lines to call off a massive attack when it's found out the Germans have laid a trap for the 1,600 men who are about to attack them. So this is an amazing anti-war statement because it has so much futility and waste in it that you're just like, every international leader should see this film. And you know, Mendes does it as an illusion, as a one shot. The camera follows the soldiers with one shot throughout the entire film.
Interesting.
So it's so interesting and so much a companion to the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One.
That's right.
Probably one of the bloodiest wars in our history. So
interesting. Then I've seen a lot of people on Twitter talking about Little Women. Where do you fall on that?
Well, I know all the adaptations, 1933 with Katharine Hepburn, the 1949 with June Allison, the 1994 with Winona Ryder. This has more of a feminist bent to it. She's combining a lot of the stories. She took both the novels, Little Women and Little Men, and kind of combined them. She shows the basic story of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott in a flashback. And when I say her, I mean Greta Gerwig, who directs and adapted it. Saoirse Ronan is Jo Marsh. Her sisters Meg is Emma Watson. Amy is Florence Pugh, a very, very up-and-coming actress. And Beth Eliza Scanlon. Laura Dern takes on the role of Marmy, and the great Meryl Streep is Aunt March. Are you familiar with the story?
Yeah. Oh, I read the book as a kid. Yeah, for sure.
There you go. Yeah. It's an American classic. And would you call it a feminist classic as far as, you know, the aspect of the March sisters kind of going out on their own during the Civil War era?
Yeah, I suppose I would. I mean, I don't think I've ever thought of it in those terms till now. But yeah, I think now you mention it, yeah, I think I would.
And you know, when I say that, I don't mean to, you know, put the vibe, you know, that everybody thinks negatively about feminism. I'm saying it's more like, you know, this is sort of like, how do women survive in an era where men are off the war?
That's right.
And they're a different kind of family, and she kind of projects those differences within the film. So 4 out of 5 for Little Women.
Okay.
And very enjoyable and a good family film, as they say.
Okay. Also, good to know.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
What else is in the theater we should
miss? So the Bombshell. Now, how much have you heard about this?
A little bit. Again, I have like film Twitter that I'm always watching to see what, like, I know how people are going to fall on certain films. I've seen a little bit of conversation, but not that much. It's mostly been about Little Women in 1917 right now.
Right, right. Bombshell, though, Charlize Theron is Megyn Kelly, Nicole Kidman is Gretchen Carlson, and Margot Robbie plays a composite character who works at Fox News, Kaylin Papasil. Now, John Lithgow plays Roger Ailes. Now, one of the lessons in this overview of the Fox News sexual harassment scandal is how a one-sided news organization has to operate from a position of patriarchal power.
Interesting.
When you think about it, because, you know, this is what they want to project into the universe, you know, that traditional American values and Republican values are the ones that's going to save us eventually. But by denying that the world is changing a bit or being negative about that change, they create an atmosphere for these sociopaths, I think. And I think the film projects that very beautifully. And I got to talk to Jay Roach, the director of the film, and he's an interesting guy. He's the guy that started the Austin Powers franchise.
Really?
And then moved into political films like Recount and Game Change, both of which were on HBO.
That's really interesting to me. I love when people successfully switch or move genres, because for some reason we have it in our head that people can't do that. That we have it in our head that, like, oh, that person is a horror director, or that person is only documentary or political or whatever. I love it when people successfully do that, because that says to me they're being an artist and they're following what's interesting to them as an artist, and they're following their artistic sensibilities. I think that's powerful when that happens.
Well, and also too, a lot of directors, it's like, you know, when they gain a little success, they finally get to go on the path that they think they should be on. And it's basically, you know, you make a movie and you hope that makes enough money to make another movie. And in this path, this is the path that Jay Roach is on, which is quite extraordinary, actually. He last did Trumbo, which was about Dalton Trumbo, the blacklisted writer. So I got to talk to him then. I talked to him now. It was quite extraordinary. It was a great conversation. You can hear it on Hollywood Chicago.
Cool. Well, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'll be sure and tweet that conversation out so that you can all find it for yourselves and listen
to
that.
You.
And then what else is in the theater that we should not miss?
Yeah, one more that I thought was really fascinating is Richard Jewell. This is the story of the Atlanta bomber. Paul Walter Hauser is the title character. Really an Oscar-worthy performance. This film is really about how we find scapegoats in America, both in law enforcement and the media. John Hamm plays Agent Shaw of the FBI, who's in a kind of a CYA situation. And the media is represented by Olivia Wilde's Kathy Strunk. Now, have you heard of the controversy about this film?
I have. That's been really interesting to follow all.
Yes. Yes, Shrugs in the film has a perception of sleeping with John Hamm to get the story. Now, Olivia Wilde explained it by saying that it was perceived that they have a relationship already, but I didn't find that when watching the film. And I'm not saying that I had the perception that that's how she got the story, but I could see where people could have that perception.
Yeah, a lot of people in the journalism world were going, hey, that we remember our colleague, and that's not how that went. You need to honor her a little bit. Yeah, a lot of people were up in arms about that. So that was interesting to watch both, like, film Twitter and film critics and people that write about that, and then also journalism Twitter. You know, like those two parts of my life colliding. I was like, wow, I'm just going to sit down and make popcorn and watch this little battle come out. It's been really interesting. So we're talking right now with Pat McDonald, who is a film critic at HollywoodChicago.com. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, Pat, I want to ask you about some digital choices. If you don't want to leave the house, there's lots of things on Amazon and Netflix to watch right now, so we're going to get into all of those here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth with you. We've been talking with Pat McDonald, who is a film critic at HollywoodChicago.com. Regular listeners of this station know him and love him because he is on lots of times. Anytime I need to talk about movies, Pat, you're my go-to for sure. Okay, so we just talked about the stuff that's in the theater that we should not miss. And now I want to shift, Pat, a little bit to talk about what, if, you know, sometimes you just don't want to go out. Sometimes it's cold or it's rain. A little bit later tonight, it's going to be rainy, I think. So sometimes you want to do the Netflix or the Amazon thing. What are some picks that you have in that digital realm that we should be watching right now?
Well, this is the new realm, you know, because we are so many people have released on Amazon Prime and Netflix in the last this year, especially.
Yeah,
it's been incredible. So I've got 7 of them.
All right,
that you can watch, and I'll just go quickly over them. But the Aeronauts. This is on Amazon Prime. This is Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones. They play British ballooners in 1862. And it's kind of an adventure. You know, it's like family classics almost. So good for the family if you're wanting to gather everybody around. And then next, The Report, which is also on Amazon Prime, has Adam Driver as Daniel Jones, who helped the Senate to investigate torture by the CIA after 9/11. So he was aided by Senator Dianne Feinstein, played by Annette Bening in a really nice performance, and bureaucrat Dennis McDonald, who was played by John Hamm. So he pulls up again there. The Two Popes, have you heard about this one?
I have heard about that. I've been interested to see that.
Yeah, Sir Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce portrayed Pope Benedict and Francis, the men who would be popes. And of course, Benedict retired and gave the reins to Francis. And what I found interesting about it is that the last three popes have been has very rich lives. John Paul, Benedict, and Francis had really adventurous lives. So you can say what you want about the popes, but there they are. And really fascinating portrayal of the two men. Honey Boy on Amazon Prime. Shia LaBeouf wrote this film while he was in rehab and stars in this autobiographical film, playing his difficult father, a rodeo clown. So there you go.
Wow.
Lucas Hedges plays LaBeouf in rehab, and Noah Jupe is the young Shia, here fictionalized as Otis Wart. Marriage Story, have you heard about this on Netflix?
I don't know that one.
Adam Driver, Scarlett Johansson portray a divorcing couple with a child and how survival is difficult in that situation. It's really an American story, you know, a divorce being a very cruel mistress, and they really show it to be a survival between two people. So very interesting. Have you heard of Dolomite Is My Name, Netflix, with Eddie Murphy making a comeback?
Yes, I have heard of that one.
Yes, this is very entertaining. Kind of like a 70s fantasy film. Rudy Ray Moore was a blaxploitation superstar. His character was Dolomite. And he had a bunch of films in the mid-70s during the blaxploitation era that were very, very popular. So Eddie Murphy loved this guy when he was up and coming, and now gets to play him on Netflix, and it's one of the most entertaining films of the year. Just pure entertainment, you know?
That's a bold statement from you. Again, you don't give out a lot of 5 stars, and you don't say of the year very often. So, okay, I'm hearing that.
Yeah, I give this one 4.5 out of 5, but, you know, a pure 5 out of 5 is definitely The Irishman. Irishman, don't be intimidated by a Martin Scorsese film with a digitally youthful Robert De Niro, or it's an art film. This is a raw and realistic portrayal of power in America in the Jimmy Hoffa era, and of course, played by Al Pacino. It's engaging for its whole length, and you can cut it up into sections. You know, you don't have to watch the whole thing in one sitting. It's very episodic. You can go scene by scene, and you can, like, say, okay, I'm ready to go to bed, or I'm ready to, you know, meet with the family. Let's cut it right here. So it works that way. Yeah, it works really well that way. And I think that's why Martin Scorsese was willing to go to Netflix. First of all, they financed it for $150 million. And the fact that, you know, they were able to accommodate that kind of length of a film. So
how long is it? It's really long, right?
3 hours and 15 minutes, but you really don't feel it if you get absorbed into the story.
Okay, that sounds reasonable. Yeah. And also, look, I feel like if Martin Scorsese comes up and says, this is what I need, they're not going to say no. No one's going to say no to Martin Scorsese. That's not a thing.
Well, I mean, he really wanted to raise the proper amount of money to do it right.
Yeah.
And Netflix are the ones that were coming up with. And doing it. I'm sorry, I'm outside right now.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot about that film, about The Irishman, that it's
like Goodfellas, it's an epic, you know, man film in the sense of, you know, this is the patriarchal system that Hoffa had during his reign, and it really is done well. It's beautiful history, basically.
And it seems like there's been a lot of conversations about that digital aging and reverse aging that's been very interesting.
Yes. One of the big controversies is that now De Niro has blue eyes because he's playing an Irishman.
Right. Also,
I mean, it didn't distract me because I knew him as a younger man, and I think a lot of people have known these actors as younger people. So when you see him, you don't really get that distracted. I don't know.
Yeah, but
it didn't distract me.
But it's interesting, right? Because I think what we're accustomed to is you cast someone who looks like the actor to play the younger, you know, the younger version. So in the credits, you're like, you know, as a boy, played by so-and-so, as a teen, this guy, which kind of brings me back to Honey Boy that Shia LaBeouf wrote in rehab. That must be an interesting process to cast yourself.
I would say so, especially in playing his father, you know.
Yeah.
It's an amazing performance because obviously he knows the guy. And the guy was a rodeo clown. I mean, you don't get odder than that, you know.
No.
And basically, too, when LaBeouf was starting his career, his dad was his handler.
Mm.
So you see that dynamic happening, which is very, very odd, you know, when the kid becomes the power dynamic in a relationship. So
sure. So who would play you in the movie of your life?
That's a good question. I don't know. On top of my head right now, I have to think of a young actor, you know. I don't know. I like Adam Driver so much. I'd love to see his interpretation.
He'd have to
shave his head, of course.
But he has to have the signature hat that you always wear, too.
The tragic 19-year-old losing his hair. That period was very epically awesome for me. How about you, Amy Guth? Who would play you?
I have no idea. When I was a kid, people used to say that I looked like Vivian Leigh, but I think that was probably a little bit of a compliment to me. And I don't know.
Well, you do have that classic movie star look. You really do. So yeah, I could see people saying that.
You know, somebody told me one time I looked like Lisa Edelstein. She's most known, I think, for playing Dr. Cuddy on that show House.
Yes.
Someone said I look like her. We have different hair. My hair is much curlier, but and I think I have about a foot on her. I'm 5'10". She's not 5'10". So I don't know. We got to work on that, Pat.
We'll work on that. I love Adam Driver and what he's doing. So if he were to portray me, that would be great.
He's been busy this year. I mean, he's on this list twice, just as John Hamm was on the list twice. Those are two actors that show up a lot in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and he's in the Star Wars, too, of course.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Lots of stuff there. Well, thanks so much, Pat McDonald.
Amy... just you're one of the great communicators of Chicago, and I'm proud to be on this show tonight.
Oh, thank you so much.
Blessings
Pat.
To you.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. And again, those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure to tweet out links to all the stuff, and I'll tweet out the list that he made for us so that we can make sure to watch all of those great picks, because Pat never steers us wrong. That's a thing. But be sure to go to HollywoodChicago.com to read more about his work in the local film community and looking at some of the big films on the big screens. All right, we're going to take a break and be back in just a bit. Here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth with you here till 10 o'clock. We were just talking with Pat McDonald from HollywoodChicago.com, talking about this kind of moment we're in between one year ending, the other one about to begin, where you kind of get a little time to chill and catch up on some stuff. So he gave some great lists of movies we should go see in theaters and that we should stream at home on Amazon and Netflix. And for those of you who have texted in, I'll be sure and tweet those out. I'm going to tweet the list to both of them. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm at Amy Guth, G-U-T-H, on Twitter. So after the show, I'll put up links to all that good stuff. And of course, they'll be named in the podcast when we post that a little bit after the show. Coming up, we're going to switch over to the business side of things. We're going to be talking with Van Mobley, who's a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. And we're going to be talking about the economic outlook of 2020. I got questions. I'm sure you do too. These are questions I talk about a lot on this station for sure. So we're going to be asking him all about that. More coming up on 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with me tonight and sharing part of your Saturday evening with me. Appreciate your time, as ever. Always grateful to you for that. Well, all night we've been kind of looking ahead of the year to come and looking back at the year that was, and in fact, the decade that was, because we're changing into a new decade. And so we're joined right now by Van Mobley, who is a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Van, thanks so much for being with us tonight. I appreciate you taking time out of your Saturday to talk with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Amy. Oh. Great to be here.
Oh,
Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you. Isn't it strange? It feels like we were just saying that. I feel like this year went so fast. I don't know about you, but I feel that way.
I'm the same way. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, you know. I don't know, but it seems like every year goes by really fast. I think last year was a good year, particularly in the markets. And I actually expect another, it'll be a tolerable year coming up as well, I think.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk with you about. You are the expert here. I love bringing in smart people to learn from them. So let's start with 2019. What, in your mind, are kind of the big moments that had an impact on the economy in 2019?
Well, I think that the economy benefited from the continuing impact of some of Trump's tax cuts and then also some of the deregulatory moves. I think the American economy is also just naturally resilient and it wants to grow. Americans are ambitious and they work hard and they're constantly trying to come up with new ways to do things better. I think you add all that together and you get an economic growth, which is what we've got. One of the things that I think that actually contributed a great deal to the economic growth is Trump's tariffs. I know that a lot of people, including there was a Fed study recently that said Trump's tariffs were not helpful to the economy. I actually believe that they were. For one thing, they sort of persuaded/forced the Federal Reserve to prevent, or not to tighten too much, too quickly, which is what the direction they were headed at the beginning of the year. But I think you had some favorable Federal Reserve policy. I think we've had progress on the trade front, continuing innovation in the American economy, and we get some good returns in the stock market and wage growth at the bottom end of the scale, which is what we've been looking for. And I look for a lot of that to continue on in the new year.
Well, I got to say, you have one of the sunnier outlooks I have talked with of any person dealing with economics. I feel like so much of this year, particularly here in Illinois, has been focused on agriculture and the agricultural impact of the tariffs. And it seemed like, I mean, at one point, you know, we have a USDA official kind of pulled out of the line of duty when there was kind of an uprising and like a little bit of consternation. You know, I feel like there was a lot of push and pull in the agricultural sector in particular. So, you have a very optimistic view of 2019, it sounds like.
Well, that's one area that certainly there was some pain in the farming community, and I know that particularly farm commodities like soybean and corn suffered. As a matter of fact, I grew up in a farm family, sort of, and I'm down here visiting my parents in Alabama. They have a farm. So there is no doubt that they have felt some pain there, but they've made we've made some progress. I certainly hope the Chinese will follow through with some of the purchases on sort of some of the soybeans and corn. I also think, you know, the Chinese have really suffered a lot from really the swine flu problem that they've had over there with all their pigs dying. And that actually impacts American exports of soybeans and corn because they buy our soybeans to feed to the pigs. And if all the pigs are dead, then they can't buy them even if we weren't in a trade war. They wouldn't have anything to do with them. But I hope that that maybe they'll get that problem sorted out and that some of the trade things, we've had an easing of some of the tensions, so that they'll be buying some more and we'll have an improvement in some of the commodity prices for the farmers. That would be nice.
You know, interesting that you mentioned that. I have been thinking a lot about that supply chain there, particularly with what we export to China, what we get from China. And there seems like there have been some during this kind of standoff with tariffs and all that conversation happening around trade, that some kind of reworking and reengineering has happened so that certain commodities could be sourced from South American markets. Does that I think there's a lot of fear going on about the long-term impact of that, of, you know, if you get a better price somewhere in South America, it's hard to recover that if trade is solved. What is the road out of that, or what does that look like in the future? Is that two different supply channels, or is that something else?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up South America. Really, we're talking about Brazil, and we, you know, the Brazilians have just been expanding their soybean and corn capacity for the last 10, 15, 20 years, really. And while I am not as greatly concerned about the environment as some other people are, I do know that it's not helpful to have the Brazilians constantly cutting down more of the Amazonian rainforest so that they can you know, grow soybeans, and then we have a glut of soybeans on the global market. And I do know that we've had the potential for some improvement in the sort of relations between the United States and Brazil, and so that we don't, you know, cut our own throats growing soybeans to sell to the Chinese. So what's one of the areas that I think that we can make some improvement in the new year is maybe talking to the Brazilians a little bit about in the United States and Brazil, and we don't have to compete so much, and actually maybe have some environmental, improvement in the environmental standing down there in the Brazilian rainforest. I think that would be good for farmers in America, too.
Yeah, very interesting thing. I'm always very interested in how many, you know, if you take one economic issue, it stretches, and there's so many paths out of it into so many other issues and stories that I think are so interesting. We're talking right now with Van Mobley, who is a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. I got to be honest, Van, I expected a more Wisconsin accent. I wasn't prepared for your Alabama accent. Nice to hear it, though. I like hearing it. I'm from the South myself, so I was like, wait a minute, he doesn't sound Wisconsin to me.
Well, I've been in Wisconsin since 91. I came to Wisconsin to go to graduate school at UW-Madison, and then I got married, and I met a woman there, and we got married, and we worked at a small school in Wisconsin. And actually, I've been there for nearly 30 years. I love the state. It's a wonderful place. The Midwest really entirely is my adopted home. But I will tell you this, and I'm kind of glad I get to come on the radio with you. My wife is an undergraduate from Oklahoma, and I graduated from a high school in Baton Rouge. So we spent the afternoon watching Oklahoma play LSU, and she is really very sour and bitter, and I had to hold my tongue the whole time and not say, go Tigers. And so when you need to demolish this tape, don't put a link to it, because if she hears me out here crowing about the Tigers, then I won't be able to sleep in the same bedroom with her for all
right.
of 2020.
You're going
to
be kicked to the couch, Van, indeed. Well, you know, my mom is an LSU fan, so she was quite delighted by the outcome of the game as well. All right, we're going to take a little break. Hopefully your wife's not listening, Van, to that part, and you're not in trouble about your sports allegiances. We're going to take a little break. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to continue this conversation with Van Mobley, who is a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, talking about the economic outlook for 2020 and big moments that 2019 held that perhaps are influencing the year ahead. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth here with you till 10 o'clock. We've been talking with Van Mobley, who's a professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We've been talking about some of the kind of big economic topics of 2019 and where they're going to lead us in the year ahead. Van, there's been a lot of conversation this year about this idea of a looming recession. There were a lot of economists polled kind of saying, well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen at this point, or maybe it's this. We saw a lot of dates being thrown around, a lot of financial quarters. What is your opinion on that going into 2020? Should we still have our guard up for that? Is that still looming, or are we kind of past that point a little, or where do you fall there?
Well, you never know what the future holds on an economic sense, but I think all the economic indicators are good. I actually look for a little better GDP performance in 2020 than we saw in 2019, and what we had in 2019 wasn't bad. This has historically been a very long expansion, you know, nearly 10 years now, starting stretching back into, you know, 2010, I think. And a lot of people, you hit the nail on the head. A lot of people have talked about, you know, why does this thing keep running along? And I think that there are a number of things. The big one, I think, is really, I have been a proponent, and I do encourage the Trump administration to continue with their readjustment of the American trade policy. I think the American trade policy, particularly in the post-Cold War era, was inappropriate. Basically, we, you know, gave away the store, hoping that everybody would trade with us and become more like us, and they didn't. And so that was a theory that's been disproven, and now we need to readjust our trading relations with our trading partners. I think that we're doing that, and I think that that can be done in a way that will be good for them and us. And I'll give you an example. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which I think has the potential to be a bipartisan agreement. Certainly Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats got input in it, as well as the Trump administration. I hope it goes through the Senate. I think that that's a better deal for the North American continent than the NAFTA was, so I think it's an improvement. And I think that we've made improvements with Japan. I think that maybe we'll be able to make a new trade deal with the British. That's the core of the American geopolitical and economic alliance system. I think as that comes into alignment, then I expect growth in our central allies. And then we're going to have to pick and choose about, you know, how we're going to adjust and do our trading relations with other countries. I'm not keen on continuing the relationship with China the way it had been since the 90s, and I don't think that we will. So it means that American businesses and consumers are going to have to adjust. But I think that we're going to adjust away from the Chinese in a way that will be very good for us in the long run, and I think in many ways we've already gone through the hardest part of that transition, and so I look for good things on that front. Not that I wish the Chinese ill, I don't, but, you know, we're not going to continue to sell ourselves down the river to them for a bunch of cheap trinkets and baubles, and that's not good for us geopolitically, and it's not good for us economically. I do see the consumer is very strong in the United States. I do know that wages are going up at the bottom tiers. That's very good. We can do some more, for example, to help people who have been left out on some of the success we've had in the post-Cold War era. I'll give you an example. We haven't built as many smaller entry-level type homes in the United States over the last 20 or 30 years. The homes that were built tended to be at the upper end. And I hope that trend will change going forward, and that will be a driver of economic growth if we can get people to really beginning to build your, you know, 1,500 to 1,700 square foot entry level home that working people can afford. I think that, you know, there's a pent up demand for that that'll keep people employed, and I think that that's something to keep an eye on in the year to come.
Yeah, you know, housing is a really interesting topic. I at least once a week talk about the housing market in various cities, obviously looking here in Chicago. But I think it's been very interesting to watch what's happened in the housing market on the West Coast. Here you see, you know, where the tech boom is around the Bay Area, and you see Seattle due to Amazon and even Los Angeles to some extent and San Diego. You see just this so much growth, and suddenly they had to really, really hit the brakes. It did an interesting thing when you're looking kind of metro area by metro area, and Chicago's always kind of done its own thing, and it's always been a little bit of an outlier, not quite tracking on national numbers, which I think is really interesting to watch. But, you know, so I'm very interested to watch housing as an economic driver, just because it has such a different character in so many cities, and it's very difficult to talk about kind of this national blanket of it when you have major metro areas driving it in interesting ways, which, so I just think that's a really interesting particular economic driver to kind of highlight. I think I agree with you. I think that we tend, for some reason, we've been very obsessed with like the luxury high end. I feel like every condo sign in my neighborhood, when condos are getting built, it says luxury condos. Everything's luxury. Like sometimes it can just be plain. It doesn't have to start there. So I think that's interesting. I think we do need to fix housing access and housing affordability, because it seems like we're making for so long we've been told, hey, the way to financial security is to, you know, buy the starter home and then trade up. You got to own your own home. And I think that's so far out of reach for people, younger people entering the job market, even up to, you know, like older millennials that are still really like struggling to even get in that first place.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on that. But also, I think, you know, the nature, there's always an American dream, but the nature of the American dream sometimes changes. And I think the American dream has been to buy the, you know, the entry-level home, and then you buy the more expensive home, and then you get a bigger and bigger home. But I really, one of the great things about being a professor is you do get to talk to younger people, and that keeps you young, I hope. You know, that's one of the reasons why I do it. And but I don't know that going forward the American dream will be to own a huge, monstrous, you know, 3,000-square-foot home in the suburbs. It may be to never own such a home, but instead to own a smaller home. And so maybe that your entry-level home is the home you want to live in forever. If it's nice, if it's quality, it just happens to be smaller. There's something to be said for that, and that may be the dream. I actually think it will be. I expect that we'll see continued home price appreciation in the lower price ranges and continued compression at the upper price ranges of homes in the United States. And that has curious and interesting spillover effects as well. I mean, I was just reading some reports that, like, Bruce Willis sold his home in Westchester County, New York, that he paid for $12 million for some years in the past. He sold it for $7 million. I know that certainly in the Milwaukee, which is where I live, the homes that are $1 million and up are just hard to sell. They don't move. And I think a lot of people who bought them at those prices are not going to be able to sell them at those prices. Whereas the homes that are at a smaller level are much, you know, they continue to appreciate. And I'll give you an example. When I bought my first home in 2000, my wife and I paid $150,000 for it in a little, you know, a Milwaukee suburb. It was built in the 1950s. We almost bought a new home in 2007, sold ours and bought a new home, and then we didn't. So we're living in the same house, and that was probably the smartest financial thing that I've ever done, because I think that my home is now worth around about $300,000. So I've continued to see appreciation in that modest home. And I think that if they built more along that scale, that would be what would, I think that's where the market is. I think that that's what we will do in the future.
I wouldn't
really want to own one of the bigger ones, you know, the $1 million and up in the Milwaukee market, or the 750 even and up.
No.
Just because they're hard to sell.
That's right.
I mean, they're just hard to sell.
Yeah, you know, we talk about that a lot during the week when talking about business topics so much. That comes up so much of houses that sold less than they sold even two sales ago. That's really stunning. So I think that's a really interesting point there. Well, I wish I had more time with you. I have so many other things I want to talk with you about as we're ticking down the clock here, though. What to you is one of the things we should watch most carefully in the year ahead, particularly in the first quarter, just going into the new year? What's kind of the big question mark in that first quarter for you?
Well, one of the things that I'm going to be looking at, because I'm confident in the housing market along the lines that we just discussed, I want to see some business investment. And, you know, that's when you get the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. I think that one of the things that would really help us to get a 3% growth target is if we saw business investment. And I think some of the business community, the CEOs and whatnot, they need to understand that really when they're thinking on the margin where they're going to make their next investment or whatever, if they're producing for the North American continent, they need to build it in the North American continent. So they need to invest in factories and plants here or Mexico or Canada or in all three areas. And I expect that we'll see that now. That will help us continue this growth.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to watch in that realm, too, particularly in the tech sector. That's interesting to me. We saw some IPOs that just didn't quite go as planned or didn't quite make it to the finish line. I'm thinking about WeWork and things like that. So I think there's a lot of question marks around investment there. So lots of interesting stuff. Thank you so much. Van Mobley, professor of history and economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can find him on January 17th. There's an Independent Business Association of Wisconsin. They're presenting the 2020 Vision. You'll be speaking there, and everybody can, if you follow me on Twitter, I'll be sure and tweet out a link to that so you can all go to that. Van, thanks so much for being with us today.
Amy, it's a pleasure. You can always give me a call. I'm happy to join you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth. Thanks so much for being with me and hanging out. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight. These are some good jams that you're playing, Yasmin. These are good. I like them. There's like a good, it feels like a good chill Saturday night kind of lounge music you're playing.
Yeah, I like coffee shops, and I went for a coffee shop vibe, you know?
I'm liking it. Nicely done.
Thank you.
You know, we have been talking a lot about kind of the year that was. We were just talking with an economist about what may be in the year ahead. There's a really fun piece, and for those of you, I say this all the time, but I always mean it. There is a really fun piece at CNN.com about, this is the headline, 2019 wasn't all bad. Here are the good things that happened. I think is really fun because here's the thing. The speed that news and life moves right now, right? Sometimes you're like, wow, that was only a month ago. That feels like a year ago, right? Because news moves so quickly. And especially if we're watching social media, that makes the news cycle much faster. Things move, 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 move. We've always got a device with us. We're always reachable. That's a whole other show that I've done several times. But this piece at CNN is really fun, and it kind of divides it by topic, sort of, I think is really fun. What on here stands out? What's the first thing that stands out to you, Yasmin?
Well, being a woman, I always like to read things about women.
That's
so
right.
If you go to the world section, you can see the Indian Navy welcomed its first ever woman pilot, and I thought that was pretty cool.
That's right. And I remember when that story happened, there was this really great picture of her in the cockpit of this like fighter jet, kind of like, yep. And she just looked like a boss. It was a great picture. It was really cool. I think that was a great one. Austria named its first female chancellor. That was a big thing. The European Commission elected its first female president. Like, lots of stuff there. Let's see. For the first time, all major pageants were won by women of color. That's a big one right there. Let's see. President Trump made history as the first sitting U.S. leader to set foot in North Korea. I remember that. I remember that news feed. I feel like we saw it over and over and over on a loop. It was like kind of in the DMZ there. He kind of steps in and it looked kind of defiant, like if a cat is sneaking where somewhere they're not supposed to be, kind of like, I'm doing this. This is the thing I'm doing. I'm going here. Yeah, that was a big one. Speaking of cats, animal cruelty officially became a federal felony. And I remember when that I didn't realize it wasn't a federal felony. It was on the state level. I didn't realize it was until that happened. I was like, oh, well, that's a thing. OK, there's that. That's a big one. And also the White House honored a military dog for the raid on an ISIS leader. That was a thing. Of course, that got some meme action, right? If you remember. There was like, that was tweeted out of like, it was a doctored photo of Trump putting a medal on a dog.
Yeah.
And that became a thing because people were like, he tweeted a picture that's not even the actual picture. It's not even a thing. So that was a thing. Gosh, Twitter's been such an interesting place.
This was the year of the memes.
It was the year of the memes. I can't even remember any because there were so many.
Yeah, every day there was a new one.
You know what I remember the most, though, in the meme realm is how many people kept going, how do I mute my timeline from, and they would post a particular meme that was going, it was like Homer Simpson sneaking back into the bushes.
But that one's iconic.
That one's iconic and effective, and you need it all the time, but everybody was sharing it. So people were like, how do I mute this? The one of the little blonde girl looking really uneasy in the car, like, is that what we're doing? Like that one, people were sick of that
yes.
one. And then the one of the guy just kind of blinking in disbelief.
Oh, I feel like that one's been around for a while.
That one's been around for a while, but
yes.
But I feel like this year I kept seeing people going,
yeah.
Hey, how do I mute that gif of the white guy blinking? How do I do that? That was a thing a lot. So I remember less about what the memes were this year. I mostly think about what are the things that people are like, okay, I'm going to put a moratorium on that. I'm done with that one.
Yeah.
I'm over that. Okay. Also on this list, there's so many good things in here. Okay, in the environmental and health and science realm, humpback whales recovered from near extinction in the South Atlantic. We like that. I did a whole entire show about endangered species one time and marine life, and we talked to those really nice people at the aquarium in, they were on the West Coast up in the Pacific Northwest, and they were so great, and they did so much work in that area, and we were talking about this very issue, so that was a thing. Also, Canada passed a bill banning whale and dolphin captivity this past year. See, these are good things that happen. We think of like, 2019 and 2018, a lot of people had a rough year. I'm one of them. I'm saying it was like an uphill year both years, but there were good things that happened. In the health and science realm, There was a lot of interesting research around Alzheimer's. I followed that one because several people in my family have suffered from Alzheimer's. So I think that one's very personal, and I've watched that with great interest. But scientists now may be able to spot Alzheimer's 16 years before symptoms begin. That is a big deal. That is a huge, huge deal because, you know, usually once symptoms begin, there's not much you can do. It's kind of on, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. There's no cure for Alzheimer's right now.
There is not.
Okay.
There is not. You can, apparently, if you catch it early, there's a lot of stuff you can do to slow it down. Mm-hmm. But you usually, I think there's like, at least this is how it's played out in my family. There's so much, I don't want to say pride, but you don't want to admit, like, what's going on? Why can't I remember this, right? So it's little things that I think a lot of times people overlook. Especially now that the world's so busy, we all go do that. We go, oh, what's the word for, oh, yeah, this, right? We all do that all the time. So it gets harder to spot. But then once it's really on, it's on. I think it's in the case of my family, it was very hard to get my family member to get medical attention for it. Because I think there's this like, oh, I don't, you know, nobody wants a tough diagnosis of anything, right? So you kind of are in denial on some level. You know, my great-grandmother, she died in 2001. By the time the diagnosis came, it was far, far too late for her, right? And so she lived with it for, I don't know, 14 years. So, I mean, quite a while.
Wow.
You know, at this point, like, my grandmother kind of, sort of knows who I am once in a while, maybe kind of, you know, like, it's a very sad disease. So I've been watching that one with a lot of interest because it's going to be too late for my grandmother, but, you know, hopefully, I mean, a lot of women in my family have had it. So my mom is always like, when does it start? What is that going to happen to me, my mom, my grandmother, you know, all these. So my mom's kind of always been thinking about that. And she's always said that to me. She's like, well, that's what's going to happen to us. I'm like, well, no, not necessarily. Come on. We take care of ourselves and you never know what could happen. So these advancements, I think, are, you know, exciting to think about. Like, that's a possible thing that these horrible diseases could be cured. There could be a cure in sight, or at least a really early diagnosis to slow it way down. So it's like, okay, it wouldn't have shown up till you're like 140 anyway. So you'll be long gone. Fine. Cause I'm planning on living until 103. That's my plan. I don't know if I will get there. I'm a little bit clumsy, but
I never thought about what age I would want to live to.
Well, here's why I say 103. Because several people in my family have made it past 100. 103 is the oldest I've ever seen anyone still be independent. Fairly independent. She shouldn't have been driving, but she was. I'll say it that way. She lived in a small community, so it's okay. But I don't know if she should have been driving, but she was. She lived alone. She cared for herself. You know, someone stopped by and helped her with stuff because she was a tiny little thing. But 104 and older is when I saw people not able to care for themselves, things like that. So I'm like, okay, 103, I got you. I can do that. 104 seems a little much.
That's such a long lifespan. That's amazing. I think my grandfather passed away when he was 51.
Oh, no.
He had pancreatic cancer, and he died about 6 months later.
Wow.
After finding out.
And yeah.
My family, there's a lot of diabetes in my family, and my father's diabetic, and they always talk, like, my dad always says, like, little depressing comments every now and then about how his father passed away, and, like, you know, he's his father's age now, and, you know, you never know when your last time could be, so...
Yeah.
It's just something I've never thought of before in age.
My grandfather, he was 46 when he had a heart attack and he died. And my dad, wow, when he was in his 40s, did the same thing. He was like, he felt like the entire year that he was 46, he was always making comments like that. Like, well, this is it. I was like, stop doing that. Stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, just take care of yourself and don't do that. Just check it out. Make sure it's okay. But, you know, like, his dad was healthy. He was active. It was just out of nowhere. It was like a heart defect. It was like a genetic defect. But it's both of our dads are right, though. You never know. You never know. So these medical advances are good things. We like to hear about them. We like those things. Here was a medical oddity that I remember. This blew my mind for days when this happened. I don't know if you remember this, Yasmin. There was a woman. I'm just going to read the headline. This happened this past year. Woman with two wombs gives birth twice in less than a month. Do you remember that story when it happened?
I did not hear about that.
Okay, this blew my mind because I was like, that is not a thing that can occur. I am a woman. I know how this works. That is not how this works. But I look it up. I read everything I could find about this woman. Indeed, she had an extra uterus. She was concurrently pregnant. So she got pregnant with fetus one, and then a short time after got pregnant in the other womb and carried them both. So she gave birth, and then a couple of months later gave birth again. First of all, bless her heart, that's a lot. That's a lot. that's a thing. I mean, I feel bad for people that have like the Irish twins that are like 18 months apart, right? I'm like, oh, that's a lot in a short amount of time. But this poor woman, twice.
She's only 20 years old.
Yeah, she's really young. Yeah. That was, I saw that. I was like, wait, is this an Onion story? This can't be real. No, it is real. It is the thing that happened. What a dubious honor she has. I don't know if I want that distinction.
It says here that she did not get an ultrasound before the first delivery, so she had no idea.
I know, right? Imagine, like, oh, look, you've just had a baby. Everything's going, and you're going to do it again in two more months. What?
That's mind-blowing. I'm like speechless. Whoa.
That whole day when I heard that story, I was like, no, this cannot be right. There has to be something wrong. Nope. Sure enough, it was a thing. All right, so we're talking about the stories that, you know what, not all the news was bad in 2019. Some of it was quite good. Some of it was kind of weird. Some of it was quite good, though. So we're talking about that. Back in just a bit for more, and then we're talking about New Year's resolutions again, and I want to hear about yours. 312-981-7200 here on WGN. WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth with you till 10 o'clock, talking about all the things of the year. You know, we sometimes have no choice but to say, here is the news, here is the situation, here's what's going on, because that is what reporting the news is. And look, sometimes people say, oh, you never report good news, because what are we going to do? Say, hey, today, sunny, and there's puppies everywhere. We can't do that. Sometimes, usually, by definition, news is news. Something different has happened, and usually that something different is not great. So, there is a piece at CNN that we've been talking about that is, the headline is, 2019 wasn't all bad. There's some good things that happened. And it's a list of all this good stuff. Some of it's really fascinating. Some of it's kind of unbelievable. There's some medical developments that you're like, what? But some of it's really, really interesting. In the space realm, I love space stuff. Regular listeners will know I love space things. I love me a good sci-fi thing. I love real space stuff. I follow NASA on Instagram. I think the guy that does social media for NASA, I've tried to get him on the air before, and it's not going to happen. But I think he's got one of the best jobs in the world. How cool would that be? You post planets. You post pictures of planets for a living. That's a pretty cool job. So here's some NASA stuff. One of those things is that we captured the first ever picture of a black hole this year. That was kind of a big deal. Do you remember that picture of the woman who, when she did it, like the scientist who was kind of sitting there and she couldn't help but kind of like, she was sort of squeaking with happiness because she was like, she just made history.
Well, I didn't see it, but I'm looking at the article right now. Looks really cool.
It was really, that was a huge moment. But she kind of had her hands up like, oh my God, this thing just happened. You could tell she was so excited. She, memory serves, I think she was a grad student. So she's, you know, young woman, like early in her career. And she was like, you just captured a picture of a black hole.
She could retire now.
Yeah. What's your plan now? Right. What you gonna do now? She's like, no big deal. When I was in grad, right. Like imagine her at a job interview in a year. So what are your qualifications? I'm sorry. I got a picture of a black hole. So you should just go ahead and hire me for whatever number I say. Thanks. Right.
For real though.
Yeah, for real. That was really awesome. I love that picture. Also, NASA completed its first all-female astronaut spacewalk. That was really cool. That was exciting. I was on the air while that happened, I believe, or shortly before it happened. And that was just kind of exciting to watch on social media. I thought it was neat that I saw women posting, or not just women, I saw parents of all genders posting pictures of little kids watching that on the news. And I thought that was so special and cool because I remember like, seeing, wow, Sally Ride went into space, and then Chris McAuliffe, even though that didn't go so well with the Challenger. But, you know, to me, that was like, wow, that's a girl doing that. Like, maybe I could go to space. That stuff matters. That is a big deal. That matters when you see, you know, somebody when you see a, when a woman sees a woman doing something else, that matters. That's a big deal.
It feels like representation in a way.
Absolutely.
I mean, I went to Kristen McAuliffe Elementary School, actually, in Tinley Park, Illinois.
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah.
What?
It's the cutest little school. I went there from kindergarten to fifth grade. They have picture. They have like paintings of the Challenger on the wall. And
I have lived in this city since 2001, and I just now I'm learning there's a Kristen McAuliffe Elementary School. What?
Okay. Yeah, you got to look it up. It's a really cute school. I actually live down the street from it, so I love going there. My little brother's in school there, too, so it's cute.
It's an elementary school.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
adorable, and it's in Tinley Park.
Yep.
I'm writing this down right now. I'm going to drive there. I'm going to go there.
It's cute. The like little commons area has paintings of like spaceships and stars, and it's really cute. It's a cute school.
I remember that day very clearly. We were like in assembly because we were all watching it. It was a thing. I don't know if that would have gone the same way now, but I don't know. They were a little realer with us then. I don't know. We were the whole school. We were all in assembly, like watching this thing happen. And it was all like, whoa, that's not going as planned. Because we all kind of were like, okay, it's launched. It's a thing. It's happening. And then, things started to deteriorate really quickly. And I think it took a minute for everybody to realize what was going on. I mean, I remember that day so clearly, so clearly. That was such a thing, and it was so exciting. This teacher was going to space. It was such a big deal. People couldn't wait to talk to her after, it was a thing. No, that was, I'm delighted. There's got to be another Kristen McAuliffe school somewhere.
Oh, probably. I wouldn't put it past anyway. I mean, it's a really historic moment in history.
For sure.
And I mean, I wasn't alive at that time, but I can't even imagine sitting down in an assembly watching that. And
yeah,
I would think it's like, is this a movie? What's going on?
I remember then the teachers didn't know what to do. So they kind of were like, we're going to have some recess. They just like took us to recess because we were all like, what does that? Because I remember kids like, I just remember they're like, does that mean all those astronauts are dead? And they're like, children, go outside and play.
Yeah. I mean, what do you tell kids in that time? And nobody expected that to happen, so
no,
it's crazy.
No one saw that coming, so that was a thing. Gosh, that was a long time ago. My goodness. Okay, back to the list of things that happened in 2019. In the sports realm, there was a lot of stuff. Okay, the Toronto Raptors delivered Canada its first NBA title. That was a big thing. The Washington Nationals finally won a World Series title. Also very big. College basketball athletes suddenly now allowed to profit from their name, image, and likeness. That was a big thing. I talked about it on the air. I got a lot of interesting calls that night, including from somebody who had, who told me that he played college and for some time pro sports. And he was very against this. He said, this is what separates amateur and professional. You should, keep the focus on academics at that point, or keep the focus on, on the game, not on the money. And then other callers were saying, no, you know what? When Loyola was in the championships, why couldn't those kids? It was a really interesting conversation. A lot of consternation. I brought it up that night on the air, just saying, hey, what do you think? Let's talk about it. Let's do some calls. People were like, why can't you? Why won't you pick a side? I was like, I just want to talk about it. It was so funny. Callers are usually like calling to say, I don't agree with you. But that night people were calling because I just said, let's talk about it. I think it's an interesting topic worth consideration. Everybody was so mad that I wouldn't pick a side. It was like, well, that's the reason you're mad now? Okay, that's what we're doing. Okay, back to sports. The U.S. women's soccer team claimed its fourth Women's World Cup title. That was a cool time. That whole thing was just, that was cool to watch. That was also the first time that I've ever seen men walking around with women's names, like wearing jerseys with women's names on them.
That's really cool.
And I didn't even think of it till I saw, all the bars had like World Cup going on and the TVs going. And I remember walking down the street and looking over, and there was a guy standing, like the windows were all open. And I looked out and there was a guy standing looking at a television, and he had a jersey on. And I was like, wow, I've never seen a man wear a jersey with a woman's name on it. This is so cool. And then I got on the train and I went somewhere and I got off the train. And I was like, oh my gosh, and it had never occurred to me that I had never seen that when I've worn stuff with like various athletes' names. Like I've worn, Didn't even think about it. And
right.
That was cool.
I mean, I'm personally not a big sports fan, but mm-hmm. this was such a cool like
it was
moment
cool.
in time. I was on this one.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were who were like, I'm really into sports, but I'm into this. It also raised a lot of questions about the wage gap and pay among men and women for their, you know, doing the same job. I think that was really interesting. Also, Simone Biles became the most decorated gymnast in history. That was really cool. I mean, she's been a name we've known for a while. So I think that was a cool moment. Also, Halima Aden became the first model to wear a hijab and burkini in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. I remember that when that happened, like Twitter was on that. People were sharing it and talking about it. And I thought that was a really interesting story.
I actually wrote a commentary article about it for my college newspaper.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. In the Columbia Chronicle.
Okay.
And I personally wrote that because I was the only Muslim on staff at the time.
Okay.
And I was talking about how I thought that was the most eye-opening and liberating moment for women who wear hijab in the model industry,
okay.
in a way, because I just felt like Muslim women who wear their hijab weren't really represented in that aspect. So I thought it was really cool, but there was a lot of backlash.
To your column? Or just in general?
In general,
yeah.
From the Muslim community, there was a lot of mixed opinions in there, but overall, like, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of people reacting very positively, saying exactly what you just said, like, this is awesome to see representation in the modeling world. This is great. I'm in favor of it. Like, a lot of people, mostly I saw very positive feedback.
Oh, me too.
A little bit of like, nah, but mostly it was, I think most, I saw a couple of men not on board, one woman and like four or five men. All of them just got like pounced on social media, though. People were like, you know, that's the thing. Like, the court of public opinion will just like gobble you up sometimes if you, you know, if you speak out too loud. So I thought that was a really interesting story. Is your commentary piece live somewhere? Can I read it?
Yeah, it's at ColumbiaChronicle.com.
Okay, I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet it out. I think that's cool.
I am going to send you a link.
Yeah, send me a link.
It was one of my favorite pieces that I wrote at my time at the college paper.
That's cool. That's great. I'm glad you did that. That's a really interesting topic for sure. Well, that was a moment in 2019 for sure. And also in sports news, Drew Brees broke the NFL record for all-time passing touchdowns. I mean, I don't even want to talk about football. I thought it was a weird year for football just because, meh, the Bears were frustrating.
Tell me about it.
There was that. That's another show. In the entertainment realm, let's touch on that a little bit. This was interesting. More than 50,000 books, films, songs, and other works of art from 1923 became public domain. It is always interesting when like a big swath of work becomes public domain. I think that's really interesting. Like Internet Archive has a lot of, you know, interesting stuff. I love to kind of go through there and see old film reels and old news reels. But when that happened, I thought that was really cool. And the other big entertainment story I remember this year was, I'm going to say two, actually. Missy Elliott became the first female hip-hop artist to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. That was a big deal. I love Missy Elliott. That was a good one. And Queen Elizabeth II published her first post on Instagram. I remember people lost their minds over that. So that is, see, lots of good news, lots of stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are talking about a way to start the new year right, get healthy. It's all about health and wellness here. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. We have still another hour to go. Lots of stuff to talk about. When we come back on the other side of news, I'm going to be talking with Claire Duggan, who is a co-owner of Duggan Sisters. They make natural products, and we're going to be talking about a big step that she says you can take to be even healthier in the year ahead. All of that is coming up, and I'm going to be talking with a motivational speaker specifically about overcoming challenges and making more accessible and inclusive spaces in your workspace or in your community spaces. All that good stuff is coming up. And as I said, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be tweeting out links to all the stuff we've talked about tonight so you don't miss a thing. You don't have to scramble to write it down. I got you. Don't worry. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth with you till 10 o'clock. Lots of stuff coming up here on the show in the next hour, doing all kind of things. We're going to be talking a little bit of health and wellness, including a really important step that you might be overlooking that can lead to big health benefits in the year ahead. And we're going to be talking with a motivational speaker specifically.
Wind the clock. It's time.
about overcoming challenges. We've got commercials playing. We got things happening. It's no big deal. It's you know, the year reset where there's technical issues happening in the booth right now. It's all good. These things happen, and that is the joy of live radio. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about all that. We were just talking about some of the big, big stories of 2019. Of course, you know, we cannot possibly talk about big, big stories, though, without looking at kind of the tech space. That's one I watch really closely. I'm always looking at that. And I think one of the big, or a couple of the bigs, right, were definitely looking at the streaming services. I feel like we talked about that a ton this year, not just Moody's cut. I still got commercials playing. Things are happening in there. I don't know what's going on. I'm just gonna turn that switch off until you get that sorted out. No big deal. These things happen. Anyway, I think that a lot of streaming services, we saw Disney and Apple get into that space doing some things. Then we saw a lot of people called it techlash, right? The kind of backlash against some of the tech founders. We saw Mark Zuckerberg being questioned by lawmakers. We saw a lot of people in Silicon Valley really kind of getting grilled, saying, hey, you know, it's been kind of the Wild West there in Silicon Valley for a little while, but there's some major issues happening. I think, I don't know. I've followed it very closely with Facebook. I think a lot of them were outlined in a film I've talked about a few times in the last few months called The Great Hack. It was a documentary about the Cambridge Analytica, data, that whole scandal, that whole thing. I thought that was a really interesting one. So I think it's been about data privacy and things like that, but also, you know, Elon Musk and, you know, that all of that realm. A lot of tech leaders have been kind of brought to the mat on some of their things. And we definitely saw some merging. We saw some companies come together, including like when we're thinking about, viewing, right? We saw like AT&T and Dish. There was kind of a standoff there, and certain shows weren't going to be screened in Chicago. And it was just a whole thing. Really, really interesting. We also saw a lot of development around podcasting this year. Just a few years ago, like, advertising and sponsorship revenue in podcasts was pennies. And now we've seen some podcasters going big. And so it's no longer like radio is the big thing and podcast is a little. They're neck and neck, and I predict in the year ahead, podcast revenue will be quite big. So that was kind of a quick peek at some big tech stories. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking with Claire Duggan, who is co-owner of the Duggan Sisters. You can read about them at DugganSisters.com, talking about some health and wellness moves that you can make to be super healthy in the year ahead. She's going to tell us all about that when we return on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here with you till 10 o'clock. We've been talking a lot about 2019 and all the things that happened this year and all the things that happened this decade. Holy moly, I'm almost exhausted thinking about that. But you know, this time of year, when it's about to become a new year, much less a new decade, we start thinking about resolutions. We think about what can I do to be a better version of myself in the year ahead. So we're joined now by Claire Duggan, who is co-owner of the Duggan Sisters. You can find out about them at Duggan Sisters. That's two G's, DugganSisters.com. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm be sure and tweet a link out after the program, who is here to talk with us about something maybe we don't talk about that often, and that is our armpits and how they are connected to our health and well-being. Claire, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Amy. Well,
so talk to me about our armpits and what people can be doing to be healthy in a way that we probably don't think about, right? We think about our diet and we think about natural cleaning products in our home and things like that. But the Duggan Sisters is all about like keeping your deodorant good, keeping your armpits good. Talk to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, thanks so much for having us back on the show. We love getting a chance to talk to America by talking to our friends here at WGN, you know, because we're a small family business here on the south side of Chicago. We're three sisters that employ our neighbors and make healthy products and try and, you know, get up every day and make the world a little bit better. And we do that because we really think that there's so many things that people get overwhelmed with. Like, as you mentioned, this time of year, people set themselves up with great big, you know, New Year's resolutions and things that are how they're going to radically change their life. And what we've really learned, you know, ironically, in these last 10 years in business, as we go into this next decade, is, you know, that oftentimes people overlook the fact that simple day-to-day changes can have the greatest impact in your life. And so, you know, we like to see, you know, we look at this time of year, you know, we've really learned through our studies and our own personal journeys of having been sisters who each suffered different kinds of real serious illness and had to get creative and get smart and fight back to be able to stick around and be on the planet, that we learned that, you know, the biggest part of our immune system that we could take care of is the fact that we're 70% water, just like the planet Earth, right? So we knew that we had to do whatever was good for that part of our body if we wanted that part of our body to be fighting and taking care of us, right? Now, everybody gets up to go to work or go out to their New Year's Eve party and they get showered on the outside. But what can we do to stay healthy on the inside to be really okay? And so when our response to that as Doug and Sisters was to create Life Stinks deodorant. It's a natural deodorant that actually works. And we only created it because we couldn't find a natural that worked. We were like all the patients who used to come to our healing center. They were frustrated. They wanted to do the right thing. They wanted to wear something healthy on their body. As you mentioned, people doing healthy things in their house or how they eat, but they knew they wanted to put healthy stuff in their body. Well, that's good and fine as long as it works, right? As long as you're not going to stink when you get to the office or be sweaty. And so, so Life Stinks was born. And we really learned through these years that the feedback we've gotten from our wonderful customers all over the world has been how that one little change made such a difference in their life. And that's why we really think it's the perfect thing to look at as a healthy choice you can make as you start the new year and the new decade, right? Because with one simple change, like switching to Life Stinks, you can do something that's good for your health. People don't understand that wearing a natural deodorant impacts your breast health, your prostate health, your thyroid health, your brain health. And as I said, it's 75% of your immune system. So just from a health standpoint, that one little daily routine, doing it right, can really help you all over the board. It can help the planet. So if you want to do something good for the planet this year, Life Stinks, it stinks, is the only refillable dry deodorant. So our wonderful customers, by being with us on this journey in this program, have managed to keep over 600,000, yes, I got there, right, 600,000 single-use plastics out of landfills, right? So by switching from a plastic applicator to our stainless steel one, which can be refilled, can have a super impact on the environment. And, you know, for us Chicagoans and Midwesterners, when we think of all the trains that pass us or maybe cut you on your commute and, you know, slow you down, that's the equivalent of 13 of those train cars going by filled with plastic that didn't go into landfills anymore. So together we can make a difference. If you're concerned for the new year about saving money, then, you know, doing something like wearing our healthy deodorant, which is super affordable, and because of your refilling, you're saving money over time. It saves you on dry cleaning. It saves you on laundering. So it can help with your money if budget's your issue for the new year. And I think it's also, sometimes people make a New Year's resolution that's about, you know, I want to do something more for others this year. I want to be more conscious of time with my family or time with my friends. And because Life Stinks is something that's dry and refillable, families can make this choice together. It's not gross. It doesn't touch anybody's armpit. You put our dry powder in your medicine cabinet and the whole family can share. So this is something you can do together with the ones you love, and you can kind of lead the way or lead by example. And I'd say lastly, if you're looking for another good initiative for the year, if you're looking to support more local businesses or more family-owned businesses or more small business or more women-owned business or more green businesses, you know, if you want to make sure that where you spend your money reflects your values in the new year, we're a great place you can do that as well.
You've covered so many bases, Claire. There's so many things. But I want to rewind a little bit back to that number that you gave, because I love that you're tracking these things. 600,000 single-use plastics, and 13 train cars, that's a lot of plastic that you have saved and that you've tracked having saved by using the refillable canister.
It is. It's a number that really matters to us, and we love to update it. We're busy building our new website right now, and I hope we can even have a little clicker on our new website that, you know, as people do the right thing, that we can see the impact we're having together. It does so matter, right? Those are, you know, landfills worth of plastics that aren't going to be there polluting the planet for our children and our grandchildren, right? And as I said, we're a small family business. So as we grow the business and, you know, we have people's support, this is something that we can hopefully, you know, grow in steroids and make it go much faster. But that really matters to us. And we are that kind of business. You know, every business has to pay its bills and pay its employees and, you know, keep the lights on. But we've never just looked at the money as part of the business. We're really in this for why it matters. And so, you know, measuring things like our impact on the planet has always been one of the top things we measure as a business, right? So I think what you measure is what matters in life. And so I think, you know, for us, we always want to keep, you know, doing not only the stuff we already do well, but how can we take it up and how can we be better in 2020 as a business to make sure that we're having the lowest possible carbon footprint and that we're helping our customers to be part of this, you know, planet saving initiative together. You know, that it does matter to us.
Certainly. And how interesting that the 10th year of your business is coinciding with stepping into the new decade. That's very interesting. What advice would you give yourself to go back to the beginning of the business? What advice would you give maybe for other people, other small business owners listening?
Yeah, I started, you know, I really, you know, we've very much learned the hard way that, you know, the old, you know, axiom, you know, you need money to make money. And so we've, you know, definitely want to make sure that you're always planning ahead for how you're going to be able to fund the next idea and the next thing. But I think what we've really learned, and that I wish I would have just kind of dug my heels in earlier on this, was understanding that core part of our business, what it's really about and what gets us going every day and what really matters every day is the conversation we're having with our customers. And so because in business, you know, you can have to worry about your suppliers and you have to worry about the stores you're in and all of those people are part of our family and that matters. But ultimately, it's between us and the people who use LifeStinks deodorant every day, that we're meeting the things that make them happy, that we've learned from them. You know, they have taught us so much. You know, we went from one little product, one lavender regular strength can to a 18-part deodorant line because we listened to our customers. They led the way, and we answered what they told us where their needs were. If they said they had big stinkers in the family and they needed an extra strength, we found out how we could do that, and we made that happen. When they said they needed to be able to take this on the road and they needed a more convenient traveler, you know, we brought that in. We've developed it to encompass everything they did. So we're here to solve the problem, and I think that's the number one thing I would tell any entrepreneur is I just hope you're really solving a problem that matters and solve it better than anybody else.
That's very, very good advice. Well, last time that you were on, I think it was a couple of summers ago, we were talking about your line of bug repellent, which I have discussed many times. Of course, all of your products have charming names. The deodorant is Life Stinks. The bug repellent is Life Stings. Hopefully, so that you will not be stung by anything. I think that one is an interesting product too because of how it tests compared to DEET. We think about being out in the woods and all the chemicals. We kind of have to, I feel like even people that are very committed to using natural products are like, okay, but I cannot be eaten alive by mosquitoes. And then this product comes along, which I think is fascinating, and it does not smell gross. I've smelled it. I've used it myself, and I can attest that it's a great product. What about that? I mean, that's probably more of a summertime thing to talk about, but I feel like we have to think about that kind of stuff all year long, really.
Well, you're so right, and I, you know, and thank you for saying that. Yeah, I mean, we're so proud of Life Stings. You know, again, that was listening to our customers. You know, we took on the chemical problem of helping them to have a natural deodorant that actually worked. And the next thing was people want to be outside to be healthy. But nowadays, with bugs being not just pests but really disease carriers, you have to be smart and you have to be preventative. So ours is minty fresh. And as you mentioned, we're very proud that because of the botanical blend we've put together, ours is actually 10 times stronger than DEET. So we can give people an opportunity to wear a healthy choice that's not only healthy for them, but think of every lake and river that you're going to dive into, every ocean. You're not putting that garbage out into the world. You're diving in with something that's healthy for you and the planet. And let's say, I do hope among your listeners, you know, some folks get lucky and they get to go to Mexico or Florida, or they get to get away from Chicago winter sometime, you know. So we do sell Life Stings all year long on our website because, you know, people say, oh, you know what, I didn't think about that at the end of the summer. I got a chance to get away. So we have, you know, customers down on the Gulf Coast and in Florida, you know, who that's just a staple that they wear 365, you know. So, you know, we're very proud of that because it is, you know, part of our mission to give people, you know, our goal is to give you natural products that aren't just the best natural, but natural products that outperform chemicals. So we don't just want you to feel like you've got the best within naturals. We want you to feel like it's the best deodorant, it's the best bug repellent. Mm-hmm. And that's really what, again, the wonder our wonderful customers have taught us through the years. They, you know, we thought we were coming in into this market to get all the people who cared about natural to have a good option, right? But by listening to our customers, we've learned, you know, people are like, I don't care how you ladies did this. I just care that this is the only product that worked for me, right? So I used to be a federal attorney, and I stood in front of court, and I would soak through my suits before, you know, court got started, and now that doesn't happen anymore. My kids used to get bullied in school because they had body odor and hyperhidrosis. They don't have that anymore. You know, people looking for solutions, and if they can get them and that's natural, that's a bonus to us, but we just want anyone to know that they can have a home at Doug and Sisters, even if they weren't thinking they were natural intended folks, that oftentimes natural can give you the best solution, not, you know, not just the best natural solution.
Indeed. All right. Well, unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time here in a couple of minutes, but if someone would like to try the products, which, and let me say, I know the Duggan sisters because I said on the air a very long time ago, there is no natural deodorant that works. And so they sent some to me and I had to eat my word. So I personally use it, and I'm not being paid to say that. I don't get anything for free. I buy it from them too. So I encourage you to try it. And if someone wants to try it, where should they go? What should they start with? All that good stuff.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we are at DuggansSisters.com. If you want to zoom right into, you know, that has lots of wonderful stories about who we are and how we got started and other health tips. But if you want to zoom right into where you can pick up the product, you can go to store.DugganSisters.com. As you said, Duggan is D-U-G-G-A-N Sisters.com. Once you're there, take a look. We've got a category that's, if you're a New Life Stinks user, it'll kind of zoom you in on what your options are there. We have a fun sample pack that lets you try all four of our flavors if you're not quite sure which one you want. So ours comes in lavender and tea tree or cedarwood and tea tree. Both of those come in regular or extra strength. And when you just need, all your customers need to know, your listeners need to know, is that all of our products will keep you dry. So unlike other natural deodorants that have no drying capabilities, ours will keep you dry. When we say extra strength, that means we can take care of extra strength odor. So whether you just need a little bit of protection or you're technically a big stinker, we've got what's something for you. You can jump right in on our flagship product, which is picking the flavor you like in our stainless steel decanter, which comes fully loaded with 9 months of deodorant, and that gets you right into that refill program and starts saving on the plastics. So that's available if you know you're a lavender person and you know you're a big stinker. Jump right in with lavender extra strength. If you're somebody who's suffering from different autoimmune conditions or there are folks out there who have trouble with their armpits, you know, they have bumps and redness or itchiness, our cedarwood line was developed especially for you. So cedarwood and tea tree will give you the same odor protection as lavender, but it's great for anybody who's got those sensitive armpits. It can be great in there, and I know you're a fan.
I am.
And everything, just to know, this is not, I'm not just talking to the ladies out there. Our customers are men and women. It's safe for all ages, from little kids that are increasingly stinking. I mean, it's now on many suburban back to school lists that the kids have to be wearing deodorant.
Really?
The danger is that, yes, as young as age 7, it's on the list that your kid needs to be in deodorant in suburban school districts. And so we've had parents come to us in tears. Well, now that's not so much a stigma anymore. It's now kind of all the kids are stinking earlier. So what I would encourage all the parents and the grandparents to do is make sure, if they have to be wearing a deodorant that young, make sure they're in a healthy one, right? Let's not add years to toxins in their life. So it's safe for all ages. We have, you know, customers who are tiny tots. We've got, you know, young mommies who've got hormones all over the place, who've got big odor control needs, and we've got senior citizens. So it's really safe for all ages. It's safe for men and women. And, you know, it's a great gift for people in your life that are active and, you know, maybe haven't thought about it. You know, that's why we try and make, like you said, we have fun names. Life stinks, life stings. We try and make it fun because, come on, it's human. We all have to deal with this every day of our lives. So let's have some fun and start the day with a smile and know that you're going to be protected all day.
Indeed. And I understand you have a special discount code for WGN listeners.
Oh, well, you know, it's the holidays, so we thought it would be kind of fun to give everybody a special thank you for listening to WGN and to listening to our story. So if you use coupon code WGN, keep it simple, and when you check out at Duggan Sisters Store, you will receive 10% off your whole purchase.
Marvelous. Well, thank you so much. Again, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet out links to the store so you can check it out for yourselves. Claire Duggan, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thanks. All right. Again, you can go to DugganSisters.com and find out more about that. We're going to take a little break. On the other side of this break, we're going to be talking with a motivational speaker who specifically is going to be talking about overcoming challenges. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth with you till 10 o'clock. Lots of things we've talked about tonight. My goodness, we've talked so much about the year. We're closing up and we've been looking ahead in many different ways to the year ahead. And one thing we can be doing is thinking about how we're feeling and talking about how, what motivates us and staying, how we stay motivated, all that good stuff. And also about how we can make more inclusive and accessible workplaces and community spaces. All that stuff is a lot to talk about, but I'm going to attempt to do it in the remaining half hour, because we are joined right now by Lloyd Bachrach, who is a motivational speaker who specifically talks to a lot of different groups, a lot of young people, about overcoming challenges in life. Lloyd, thanks so much for being with us tonight. How are you?
I'm fine, Amy. How are you?
Wonderful. Well, talk to me about some of the work you do. You speak with so many groups, and you have such an inspiring message to motivate people about challenges they're facing. Tell us about that, if you would.
Well, it started years and years ago now. I've been doing this for about 25 years. Prior to me being a motivational speaker, I was a gymnastics coach for the Chicago Park District. And during my tenure there, I found myself obviously coaching the kids and also encouraging them to overcome the challenges they faced. And some of the coaches that I worked with and a few of the parents of the students that I had were teachers and had asked me to come to their classroom and just tell my story of overcoming the challenges I faced. I was born with a rear congenital bone deficiency. My left leg is known as PFFD, which is proximal femoral focal deficiency, and my right leg is coxa vara hemimelia. And basically the easiest and best way to say it is I was born missing bones in both legs. So I do have legs, but they're very small, and I think from the kids that I coached seeing my ability to overcome the challenges I faced, it was inspirational to them.
And how did you first begin, moving from gymnastics coach into the realm of speaking to groups and motivational speaking?
Well, as I said, some of the people that I knew had asked me to come to their venues. And one of my friends who had a daughter who was born missing a portion of her arm was just about to start school. So I was asked to come to her school and speak to the entire student body at that school and just kind of prep them for the next year when my friend's daughter was going to be starting. While I did this presentation, and within my presentation, I must explain that I do wear artificial limbs now, prosthetics, and I walk into the school wearing my prosthetics. I then explain to the students that I was born missing bones in my legs, that I am wearing prosthesis, and a little bit later, I'm going to remove them and show them how they fit me and how I am able to get around without them. So I do that within my program, and it's very enlightening to the kids. I think it's something that they don't often see, and I do it in a way that is very palatable, so they really tend to, I think, learn a lot, and I do it in a way that's entertaining, so there's an entertainment factor as well.
We're talking right now with Lloyd Bachrach, who you can read about at yesyoucan.net. Put a hyphen between each of those words. Yes-you-can.net. You can read about his work and his story and all of the motivational speaking that you do. Lloyd, when we're thinking about community spaces, and that can take a lot of forms, right? That can be any kind of civic group. That can be a house of worship. That can be even a school. That can be a workplace. Any place where a lot of people are gathering. I think there's been a lot of conversation around building workplaces and community spaces that are accessible to as many people as possible and inclusive to as many people as possible. When, for maybe someone listening who is thinking, you know, I want to make my, say, community center or house of worship open to everybody and accessible to everyone, what are some of the things that people need to be thinking about when they're building towards that?
Well, I myself serve as the committee chair for our synagogue, which is Emmanuel Congregation up on the north side of the city. And recently we received a grant from the Jewish United Fund, and the grant was to make our services more accessible, as you said, and inclusive. So our idea, and it's not my conception, but we found it from another synagogue, and that was we built an ability cart. And this ability cart contains different items that would make the services more accessible, more available to people that might have needs. So we have a device that people could put on that would allow them to hear the services better. We have magnifying glasses so that people could open the book and be able to see the book and the prayers better. We have book holders because some people are unable to even hold the book. So we have these book holders that clasp onto the seat in front of you, and people would be able to place their book within the book holder. And we've also purchased e-readers so that we've uploaded the prayer books onto the e-readers so that the people could choose their own text size. So this is another thing that we've also put in, which I think is very important, is fidget gadgets that are silent. So people that might need to keep their hands busy have these gadgets available to them that won't interfere with anybody else's ability to enjoy the service, but keep them occupied as well.
Mm-hmm. And for people who might be in a position to do that kind of organizing in their space, what is the best way to begin? You know, you mentioned funding. You have to, I'm sure, work with many stakeholders in the organization. What kind of, how do you begin that process in an organization?
Well, what we did was we went to another synagogue that had done this and saw what they did. And then it was a matter of just kind of duplicating it. We received the grant from the Jewish United Fund, which was an awesome grant that allowed us the financial ability to do this. And then it was a matter of just having fun and going shopping and making sure that we were able to get the tools needed for everybody that might be able to partake.
Yeah, I think that's so important, right? To supply people with as many opportunities to participate fully as possible. I think that's so important for workplaces, for houses of worship and various community centers. I think that's really important. That's really an important project that you just did.
Yeah, I think it was received well, and we just implemented it about a week and a half ago. So we'll soon find out how well it works. But I think once it does, once the community does see it and take part in it, I think they'll really relish in the fact that we have it.
Yeah, certainly. So I want to switch back a bit to your work as a motivational speaker. I think that's such an interesting topic that, you know, to go into schools and various community groups and talk about challenge. I think in particular, it's interesting to me that, you know, bringing topics to young children, sometimes I think kids are more open to conversations than adults are. I really do think
without
that.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, it's funny when I'm talking to clients who are in the process of booking me, and I tell them, first of all, I tell them that I wear tearaway pants, you know, like as the basketball players wear. So I rip my pants off and, you know, expose my legs to the children. Well, Amy, let me tell you, the first time that, and this is many years ago, but the first time that I watched a videotape of myself giving the program and peeling my pants away, it sort of became more apparent to me why the kids sit with awe in their face, because I never looked at it from their perspective. But once I did it, it is kind of shocking to see me standing there. My legs are very small, enclosed within my artificial limbs, and it is a very different look, you know, so it's not something that they often see. I do wear shorts, so it's nothing like, you know, a Chippendale dancer or anything like that.
Right.
But, it really gives the kids an opportunity to see somebody who might be different in a comfortable setting without it being scary, because I do prep them. And then I sit down, or I'll actually walk through so the kids can get an up-close look at how they fit me. Then I'll sit down and remove my prosthetics so that they could see how they fit and then how I'm able to get around without them. As I do have feet, I am able to walk without my limbs. And without my limbs, I go from 5'8" to about 3'9".
I think, too, you know, several times on the program tonight, we've talked about the value of representation in various spaces. I think that that's really important. We've talked about that in a lot of different contexts tonight with different things. But I think, too, you know, I think that's important for children to just to understand, you know, bodies look a lot of different ways. And people look a lot of different ways, and bodies function a lot of different ways. I think that representation for children is so important to help build inclusive spaces and accessible spaces, so that children who might have any sort of, you know, physical something that makes them feel different in a physical way from other children, that they feel represented and they feel kind of probably seen, I imagine.
Yep, very much so. I feel that if there is a student at a school that, and I use the term differently abled as opposed to disabled or handicapped, mm-hmm. I find that everybody's differently abled. We all do things in our own different way.
Sure.
If we all did things one way, there isn't one way to do anything. There's many ways to do everything, is what I say in my program. So I think it really does give the kids who might be differently abled, I'm a role model to them. And the kids who are able-bodied, who see me and then see me both with my limbs and without my limbs, they see that I'm no different either way, and I'm just the person. So it sort of gives them permission to maybe be more accepting to their classmate.
Yeah, certainly. And again, that representation that we've been kind of talking about a bit tonight. So lots of things.
Another thing that I feel very fortunate on, for the past 10 years up until this year, I received a grant from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Foundation, where I was going around to inner city Chicago public schools, giving my program to the middle school level age students. And it was, I really think, beneficial to them in the respect that, you know, yes, they might not be differently abled in a physical sense, but maybe in an economic sense, or in the neighborhood that they're growing up in, they might not have the benefits of others. So I really think that in that respect, the program going into the inner city really had a strong impact on Chicago public school kids.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that. I mean, it seems that the messaging in your program translates far beyond different abilities and into a lot of other differences, including class and economic issues and things like that. And I think that's probably the thing that makes your program resonate so much is this theme that a lot of different children can attach to.
Exactly. And I tell them that your challenges are not my challenges. But we all have challenges.
So where can people go to find out more? And I mentioned the website, yesyoucan.net, which I will tweet out after the program. For those who follow me on Twitter and Facebook, I'll be sure and share that. What other resources would you like to plug or send people to, or any events coming up, things like that?
Well, I'm always, I speak around the city in the suburbs, and so I'm always available. People can come and check me out if they want. I do have a couple of websites, not only the one that you're giving, yes-you-can.net, but if you just type in my name, lloydbachrach.com, that'll also get you to my site and give you more information about what I do and what I offer and what I could bring to your organization.
Certainly. There is a lot of information on that website. So again, I'm going to be sure and share that on social media, and we'll link to it on the podcast at WGNradio.com, because there's a ton of great information there. There's a lot about your program. And so for organizations that might be interested in having you speak to their group, they can just visit there, yeah? Best way to do it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Most definitely. And another thing that I don't want to be premature, but I might be getting back into the coaching arena this coming year. I'm waiting to hear from some people, but I'm looking forward to getting back into the gymnastics arena as a coach, which is something I haven't done in about 20-some years now.
Oh, that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I do look forward to it, in giving my wisdom of these high school students of a sport that I loved so much, in that of gymnastics.
Certainly. Well, you have so many good messages for kids. Do you also do speaking with adults, or is it mostly, it seems like it's mostly focused on kids?
I do adults as well. I do a lot of groups that deal with any challenges. Anybody that faces challenges, they want to be inspired. So I do all different types of organizations.
That's your game, indeed. All right. Well, again, for those of you who follow me on social media, I'm going to be sure and share links out. Lloyd Bachrach, thanks so much for being with us tonight and talking about all
the work
you do.
Oh, Amy, thank you for having me.
Certainly.
Thank you for having me, and happy holidays to everybody out there, and happy New Year.
You too. Happy New Year, and happy new decade. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe we're there.
I know. It's amazing how fast it goes.
Time flies, indeed. Well, thanks so much, Lloyd. We'll talk to you again soon.
Amy, thank you so much.
All right. So we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Holy moly, we are almost out of time already. How did that happen? How did we do that? What happened there, Yasmin? What did we do? I feel like we just started talking away and I can't hear you. Your mic's not on. Try again. Nope. That's not going to do it. Oh, no. Oh, no. I've lost you. What am I going to do now? Oh, man. Well, I can see that you're talking, and I'm sure what you're saying is very spot on and intelligent and great. Yeah, we've had a couple little tech issues happening in the booth in there tonight. So, we'll see. Well, anyway, I'm here to tell you that I thought it was really fun to be back in this time spot again tonight. Haven't been here in a minute, but it's really, really fun. And I don't know when I'm back, but I look forward to being back for sure. And we'll, hopefully hear from some of those great guests again sometime. If not with me, with somebody else. I like to share good guests with other hosts. So, again, if you follow me on Twitter, I will be sure and share links to all the stuff we talked about tonight. And I'll put it up on Facebook and LinkedIn too. LinkedIn, I won't get to that tonight. I'm going to go home and go to bed probably. So it'll probably be another day or so. But sometime this weekend, if you follow me on any of those platforms, I'll be sure and post some links up to all the things. And of course, when the podcast is up at WGNradio.com, you will see all the people. You'll see all the links and all the stuff and all the things those people are doing, because everybody tonight had great things to say. We learned a lot of stuff, from films to keeping healthy to staying motivated through life's challenges to what the economic outlook is for the year ahead. So lots to do. We're going to take a break here in just a little bit and turn things over to the next host. So much going on, so many things. And we can't break yet, can we? Can we take a break? Yeah, we're going to take a break. Again, I wish your mic would work. Yasmin, oh my gosh, I want to hear more from you. You have great things to say. Poor thing, her mic, she's in there talking behind the glass. She's talking, but I can't hear a word. It's a shame. All right, well, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, that does it for me, Amy Guth. 7 to 10, that's a long haul, but we did it. Thanks so much, especially to engineer Dan Long and to producer Yasmin Shika. Poor thing, her microphone stopped working. Now it works. Yeah? Does it work now? Maybe. We're thinking about it.
It works now.
It works. Yay. There you are. You're back. I didn't want to close the show without hearing from you one more time.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. You know what? You had some technical issues that were not your fault, and you handled them like a boss is what. So all good. I appreciate you. Thank you so much.